Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. I love your sweater.
Hi. Thanks. You like the blue and the purple that do not go together?
It looks gray in that lighting.
Well, it is navy blue, but yeah, I'm glad you're the only one that can see me right now.
Is that a horny frog on your... What?
If that's what you want to call it. Yeah, a horned frog. Not the...
Oh. What did I say? Horny frog? I messed up. I'm sorry, guys.
It's a TCU horned frog, okay?
Okay. I'm not a sports fan. I'm sorry. You know what I meant. Do you want to do thankful now or later?
Okay, let's do it later.
Okay, we're going to do the thankful at the end. We're thankful, yeah. What we're thankful
so
for.
So you have to listen to the whole episode.
Yes. Don't you dare leave at the end. Yeah. Okay, well, let's just jump in.
Okay.
To the sode. And I'm gonna tell the story a little bit differently than I normally tell a story.
Okay, I like it.
So, November 19th, 1986. What a year. I was still peeing in my pants. You probably were too.
Probably.
I don't know. Maybe you were potty trained by then. November 19th, 1986 was, like most days in Canton, Massachusetts. Thanksgiving was right around the corner. Snow blanketed the ground and the rooftops. It was beautiful, bright white scenery. Can you imagine? Like, so picturesque.
Yeah.
Actually, just the day before, there was so much snowfall that school was canceled. And the kids were thrilled to have a snow day with their friends.
Of course.
So the holidays were upon them, and now they get an extra day off school. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know, in Texas, it didn't have to snow very much for the schools to be closed. So
we have like sleet, and they're like, the bridges. Yeah,
can't drive.
Well, one kid, Sean Ouellette, he was just 14 years old. He was encouraged by his mom to go outside and play. She's like, go on. It's snowing. It's amazing. They had actually just moved to Canton not too long ago because Sean's little sister, Yvonne, was disabled. And his mom thought that being near one of the top area hospitals was the right move for the family. She was a single mom. And, you know, she was just doing what she thought would make their lives the best it could be. So Sean hadn't made many friends by then, and his mom wanted him to, you know, put himself out there.
Aww.
And Sean was like, can we just put the Christmas tree up instead?
Which, sure.
I would also be wanting to put the Christmas tree up at that time, but she was like, it's not even Thanksgiving yet. Go play. we'll put the tree up later. So he did. He went out and he had fun. Now, the next day, the 20th, school was back in session, much to everyone's chagrin. Now, Sean walked to the door to head out for school in the morning, and he and his mom kind of glanced at each other, and then he just left. His mother told Investigation Discovery that it was like any other day. She didn't really even tell him goodbye. It just kind of happened so fast. He just, you know, they kind of glanced at each other while he was walking out the door. And that afternoon, she was like, I'm just going to lay down, take a nap, which, yes, love a nap. But she woke up suddenly from her nap, like, you know, when you kind of nap too long and you're like, whoa.
Disoriented. Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how she was. So she woke up suddenly, like kind of a jolt, woke her up, and she looked at the clock and it was after 3:30 p.m. And by this time, Sean should be home, like digging around in the kitchen for a snack, you know, but he wasn't there. And call it mother's intuition if you want, but she felt like something was wrong, like right away. She started calling all of his friends, like the ones she knew he had. And this is the late 80s. They had directories back then. You know the directories I'm talking about.
Yeah.
When we were kids, our parents had the directories of everybody in our school, especially everybody in our class. So she's probably going down that list, calling everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, no, I haven't seen him since school. So now she's like, okay, so he did make it to school. He went to school. So she heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just calling. Well, hours later, when Sean still hadn't returned, she called everyone back again. She's like,
oh,
hi, it's me again. Have you seen Sean? And nothing had changed. Still, nobody had seen him. The parents were going, hey, Bobby, have you seen Sean?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm so sorry. We haven't seen him. Then she was like, okay, I'm driving to the police station. I'm not even going to call. I'm driving up there. So she did. She drove up there. She reported him missing. She had a conversation with one of the detectives and just kind of filled them in. Now, pretty early on in this missing persons investigation, they got tips from fellow students at Canton High School, where Sean attended, saying that Sean had plans to meet up with a friend after school that day. And that kid's name was Rod Matthews. But when they spoke to him, he said, no, I haven't seen him. Haven't seen him all day? Like, no, didn't even see him at school. Said he didn't even see him at school. So investigators were like, okay, that's weird because everybody else saw him at school.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. So they moved on, spoke with some other classmates, and they really weren't getting anywhere. But his mother remembered that during the time he was missing, she was seen as almost a pariah around town. She would go into the local diner just to get out of the house. You know, she just wanted to go in, have a nice cup of coffee, maybe get some breakfast, just to get out of the house, you know?
Yeah.
Take her mind off things. But it didn't take her mind off things because she'd walk in and everyone would kind of turn their heads and look at her like,
oh, man.
And then get all quiet. Like she had done something wrong. In fact, she was told by some of the locals that she brought bad luck to the neighborhood.
What?
How?
People, you know, this never, that reminds me of the, one of the hunter, the, oh my goodness, what is her name? The one that was killed by a hunter and they were new
Karen
to town
Woods.
And yes. And she was new to town and they were like, well, you should have known to be wearing orange.
That anyway, is garbage.
That just came into my mind.
They should be ashamed of themselves, honestly.
But it came to my mind just because people are like, the way that people act is just horrendous.
It is. It's selfish. It's narcissistic. And it really breaks my heart that instead of feeling like her community was rallying around her at that time, that she needed it. She was a single parent. And she had no one else. So they instead stood back and watched it all unfold like a, I don't know, a bad car accident, you know, not to help at all. Well, several days into the investigation, the bus driver recalled making a stop at Pleasant Street and remembered Sean and this red-haired kid getting off the bus together. Now, Sean didn't live at Pleasant Street. That wasn't his stop. So when they start trying to figure out who this redhead kid was, the only person that fit the description that would have been on that bus and that would have gotten off the bus at that street was Rod Matthews.
You're going to say that.
Someone they'd already spoken to. Remember that? But When he was initially asked about Sean, he denied seeing him the day he went missing, said he didn't even see him at school. Some of the classmates said, oh yeah, I saw him at the bus. But Rod said, no, haven't seen him all day. Now they circle back around to Rod because this new information from the bus driver suggests that he's lying. Well, they probably knew he was lying before this. Detective Chip Callery popped over to Rod Matthews' home again because everything keeps pointing back to this Rod kid. And they said, listen, remember when we asked you if you saw Sean the day he went missing and you said you hadn't? Well, we heard that you had because you got off the bus with him. Tell us more. Just then, Rod's mom chimes in and said, oh, is Sean kind of like heavy set? Yeah, he was here playing with Rod that day. And Detective Callery goes,
excuse me?
What's going on here? Why is he lying? And why is his mom just now saying this? Like, why didn't why didn't she mention this the last time I was here? So he's like, something's going on. What's going on? I don't like it. Rod said, well, yeah, I remember now. He was here. He was buying bottle rockets, and he didn't want me to tell anyone, so I didn't say anything.
Right.
Like, he was upset. He said he hated it here, and he was going to go back to Hull because he was being made fun of at school. Now, Hull was where he was from, and it was like a bus journey away. It wasn't too far. He probably could have caught a bus and gone to Hull. But Detective Callery knew that was a lie. And what was more eerie than knowing you're onto something in the investigation of a missing child was the smirk written all over Rod's face.
Oh my gosh, like he was not going to get in trouble. Like,
he goes, Detective Callery said, are you telling me everything? Like, is there anything else you want to tell me? Is this it? And Rod went, and just kind of smiled and turned to him, kind of gave him a grin. And I bet the detective felt like, I didn't just ask you if you farted in church.
No.
Okay? I'm asking you if you know where this missing child is.
Exactly.
Like, this is nothing to be laughing about. So I'm not understanding
your behavior.
The arrogant smirk. And Rod was 14 as well.
Okay.
So detectives got a couple leads. They got a phone call from a woman randomly that said, I heard what happened to Sean, but I can't tell you. I can't tell you. And she hangs up. So they put it on the news. They said, we're looking for this woman who called and says she has information. And they're like, you know, there's a missing child.
She obviously wanted to say something.
Yeah.
And that's what they... It was obviously eating her.
Yeah, and that's what they thought. So they were trying to give her another opportunity to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
Or give someone that knew her and knew something an opportunity to come forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because time is of the essence, you know?
Right.
So after this, shortly after, detectives received this anonymous handwritten letter in beautiful cursive. You know how they used to teach us cursive and they don't even teach that in school anymore?
Yeah.
Detectives received this anonymous letter saying exactly where they could find Sean, down to the exact location. The author of the letter explained how they were sorry that it took them so long to reach out and tell them what he knew.
Okay.
But it said, Sean didn't run away. He went to Rod's house and Rod killed him.
Okay.
Like he planned to do. It went on to say, if you go to Sawyer Avenue near the new industrial park, Sean will be found in the woods at the top of a hill. Reading this, police were chilled to the bone. And I don't mean the bitter cold weather outside. This letter was so specific. And they believed they had something viable here. Like, they set out in droves because they were confident this is the end to the weeks-long search for Sean Ouellette. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they were right. They found Sean's body frozen right where the letter said he would be.
Wow.
Now, it wasn't clear at the time his cause of death, but they'd soon find out from the medical examiner that his skull had been crushed with a blunt object.
Oh, man.
Now, with all the statements from the classmates about Sean's plans that day, the letter sent to the PD, and the baseball bat with blood on it that they found in Rod Matthews' home.
Oh my gosh. Why did he keep it?
Rod was arrested on December 13th, just 2 days after Sean's body was found, by the way. Now, he was evaluated by a mental health counselor because they were probably like, are you okay, kid? And he told them that he watched a video called Faces of Death that showed humans and animals being killed. And he decided, that looks pretty cool. I'm going to do that. So okay. It soon became clear that they were dealing with a sinister pathology here in a 14-year-old child. So
wow.
Rod's murder trial began March 2nd, 1988, and he was tried as an adult. He was tried as an adult.
Dang.
Prosecutors explained to the jury that Rod convinced Sean to come to his house and hang out, and also promised him some fireworks. Mm. Once they were done playing pool, Rod lured Sean out into the woods under the guise of building a fort, and he'd finally get those bottle rockets that he told him about. You know, going for that first degree conviction with the premeditation element. Rod also brought along a baseball bat that he said he needed to return to a friend while they were out. Oh, yeah. Why are you bringing a bat out to the woods? You know? Right. Oh, it's a friend's. Well, once they reached the area deep in the woods, he hit Sean in the head with the bat. Sean fell to his knees and begged for his life, and Rod kept swinging. Mm. He hit him in the head at least a few times, crushing his skull. Could have been anywhere from 3 to 7. They don't know. Sean's body was just left there in the woods in the snow. And afterwards, he cleaned the bat in the snow, and he walked to Robbie Peterson's house and said, guess what I just did?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Robbie was like, what? And he's like, let me show you. I'd rather show you. So he takes Robbie to see Sean's body in the woods. And Robbie was like, dude, why did you do that?
Oh my gosh.
And Rod was like, just for the heck of it. So after Robbie and Rod parted ways, Robbie goes home and he calls up their friend Jonathan Cash. And he's like, dude, he actually did it. He killed Sean.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Jonathan was like, whatever, stop. And meanwhile, Sean's mother is calling looking for Sean. This is the day he went missing. And, you know, Jonathan's mother is going, hey, Jonathan, do you know where Sean is? No. Hey, Robbie, do you know where Sean is? No.
Wow.
So they just sat silent. Well, days passed, and even though Jonathan knew he hadn't seen Sean since November 20th, and no one else had seen Sean for that matter, he still didn't believe that Rod had killed him. You wouldn't. You wouldn't believe your friend would actually murder someone, even if they said they planned to do it. You just,
right.
You're like, no, that's stupid. That's, nobody would do that. That is until Rod, accompanied by Robbie, took Jonathan to see Sean's body now after a pep rally at school.
Oh my.
Yeah. He's
gosh.
Like, you don't believe me? Come on. And what's amazing to me is this is like a week later. His body's still there in the woods, frozen in time.
Oh my gosh.
And he's like, yeah, look, he's over there. He's dead.
And he was just proud of it. Like, here, look at my work.
Yeah. And he told them, y'all better keep quiet. And he said, if you tell anyone, you'll be next.
I had a feeling.
And they were like, I kind of believe you, man. I kind of believe you. So Rod sat emotionless, unbothered during the trial that lasted just a week, by the way. Saw photos and videos of Rod sitting there at the defense table in his little sweater and his bright red hair. And now he was a child. You know, if you didn't know what he'd done, you might take pity on him. And that's one of the reasons it's so profound is that he's like completely expressionless, like no remorse whatsoever. Now, the defense argued. That's chilling. It is chilling. And he's a child. And children's emotional regulation is at an all-time low. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say especially during adolescence. So the fact that he showed no emotion at all makes me feel like he was not capable of showing emotion. Now, the defense argued that Rod was a mentally unstable child who was on Ritalin, and that messed him up, you know. Well, the prosecution brought in two child behavior specialists to testify that Rod's violent behavior was not a result of psychosis. They said, sure, you know, Ritalin might exacerbate the violent urges, but the drug isn't responsible for the idea of killing someone. It doesn't put it into your mind that you should just go kill someone. And he'd been on that drug since the third grade. So, and about the idea of killing, he'd been talking about this with his friends for like a month. Robbie Peterson and Jonathan Cash, those boys, his friends, testified that he'd been thinking of killing someone, and he was even naming people. He was like, oh, Joe Schmo. No, not him. Oh, John Doe. Oh, not him. So he was going down this short list of people, and then he decided on Sean, because according to his friends, he wouldn't be missed. Wow. And Sean, oh my gosh, he looks precious. Aww. Like, my heart aches. I miss him. I miss him.
No.
So he is missed, okay?
Yeah.
And I know his mama and sister miss him.
For sure.
Now, Jonathan Cash also said that, you know, that anonymous letter that explained where to find Sean's body, that was me. I wrote that.
Well, thank you, but what took so long?
Yeah, exactly. He testified that Rod took him, Jonathan, and Robbie to see the body after that pep rally at school, days after the murder. And he told them how he cleaned the bat in the snow. And after that, Jonathan said, I couldn't sleep. I could not sleep for days.
Yeah.
And then he said he wrote that letter to police. About a week after he'd seen Sean's body there in the woods, he went back to the woods.
Jonathan went back?
Yes. And he said he was taking notes. Like, okay, there's a tree there. Okay, here's a hill. He was trying to take notes so he could give specific details and instructions on where the police could find Sean. And actually mentioned in his letter as well, he was saying, I'm sorry that I don't have the courage to face you. Like,
oh my God.
I was scared. You're embarrassed. He's a child. And, you know, you're dealing with boys here.
Right. Like,
gosh, I can't say what was going through his mind. I can't say what took him so long, but.
Right.
Would they have ever found Sean? Like, when would they have found Sean if he didn't come forward?
Thank God, yeah.
So, after a 10-hour deliberation that was over the course of 2 days, the jury found him guilty of second-degree murder. I couldn't find why they decided second-degree. First-degree is life in prison with no parole. The second-degree was life in prison with the possibility of parole.
Of course.
Maybe because they were trying him as an adult and he was only 14 at the time of the crime, the jury took
the lesser charge.
A pity? To... Yeah, the lesser charge, I don't know. But there certainly was that premeditation involved. He planned it 100%.
And he liked it. And he was... He could have done it again if he wasn't stopped.
And he would have.
Yeah.
He would have. I truly believe that. Now, Rod Matthews went before the parole board in 2001, and he was denied parole.
Okay.
He was denied parole again in 2007. In March of 2016, Rod went before the... Did I say Rob just a second ago?
No, I think you said Rod.
Okay, well, pretend I said Rod if I didn't. Rod went before the parole board again and told the board, you know, I'm not the same person I was when I was 14. And I'll say, because he had shaved his head, you know? So yeah, you don't have hair. You're not the same person.
Oh, man.
And through sobs, Rod said, as sick as it sounds, I wanted to prove I could murder him. And that's a quote, a direct quote. He went on to say, quote, today I'm 43 years old, a mature adult. I understand why I murdered Sean. I know I will never hurt anyone again, end quote. I wonder if the parole board was like, oh, you know? Oh, you know? Well, if you know you'll never hurt anyone again, we'll take your word for it.
Yeah, you know? We'll believe you.
Spoiler alert, they did not say that. In fact, the parole board asked him again and again, but why did you kill Sean? Tell us a reason. Like, why did you do it? Because saying, like...
Just because I could. Just because I wanted to show it could be...
Yeah, they weren't satisfied with the explanations he was giving. Like, the whole, I just wanted to do it. I just wanted to. A criminologist from Northeastern University, James Fox, explained to the board, on behalf of the defense, the reason why kids... this is what he says... quote, the reasons why kids commit murder, unlike adults, tend to be rather trivial, end quote. I mean, okay, I'd say that most motives for murder aren't good enough for a victim's family.
Exactly.
If they get to hear one, like, even we say that, Lena, like, no reason is ever good enough. Like, we'll never be satisfied if someone says, you know, we'll never go, oh, you killed him because he made you mad. Touché. Why didn't you say so? You know what I mean? Like, that's not good enough. No reason is ever good enough.
Right.
So, several months later, the parole board had made their decision. His release was denied again.
Oh.
Then most recently, in June of 2021, he went before the board again and told them pretty much the same thing. He was no longer, quote, emotionally disturbed, end quote. And when he was younger, he committed a sick and senseless act. And he hung his head, he cried loudly, and he really went for it. Like, he really... He went for it, you know? There were tears. The criminologist comes back, you know, James Fox, and he told the parole board that the part of the brain that controls the ability to think things through, consider consequences, isn't fully developed in an adolescent. And he was supporting Rob and had supported him in his previous parole attempts. And in saying that Rob was a child at the time of killing, he knew not what he did. While the criminologist has a point about, you know, the frontal lobe not being fully developed, the desire to want to know what it feels like to murder someone is abnormal thinking.
Well, yeah.
That's not just, Like, that negates the argument. If you
But to say that several times, I just wanted to know that I could do it. I wanted to show that I could do it. I just wanted to.
Exactly. Like, but if you approached 100 14-year-olds right now, just to do like mm-hmm. a canvas, mm-hmm. and you asked them if they would kill someone just to see what it feels like, most of them would be like, what's wrong with you? Like,
yeah.
No. Because even approaching the concept would make even an adolescent uncomfortable. That's not a normal way of thinking.
Right.
Well, the following year, in February 2022, at 49 years old, Rod was denied parole yet again for the fourth time. The Patriot Ledger reported that the parole board cited that he, quote, did not demonstrate a level of rehabilitation progress that would make his release compatible with the welfare of society, end quote.
Wow.
I love the way they put that.
I applaud that.
Uh-huh. They said, look, we realize that he was only 14 when he murdered Sean, but mm-hmm. he planned the murder with no peer pressure, no outside influence, nothing. So this whole, I just wanted to prove that I could kill him, you know, because I was talking about it with my friends and right. I just wanted to like prove I could do it. In fact, at the trial, Jonathan Cash testified that Rod had been talking about this for over a month. And I think I had mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So he was actively planning it.
Right.
Talking about other victims. And Jonathan even said at one point, he started telling people, don't go anywhere with Rod alone. Like,
oh,
just
gosh.
If you plan to, you know, like, just watch out for him.
Oh, my Lord.
So you wonder why he wouldn't warn Sean directly. But he did say at the 1988 trial that he sort of did. He said that when he heard Sean saying that he was going to go to Rod's to get the fireworks, Jonathan told Sean, you should have him bring the fireworks to school.
Oh, no.
Like, I wish he maybe would have been a little more direct, like, stay away from him.
Yeah, don't go.
Stay far away from him.
Oh.
But Jonathan and Rod were friends, you know? He was friends with him, and so he was like, why don't you just have him bring him to school? You know, because he didn't believe Rod killed him at first, so he probably didn't believe that he would kill him. And so Rod wanted to do this all on his own. And the callousness and the arrogance after the murder and during the investigation is just scary, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the board suggested that Rod get involved in mental health treatment for his inability to feel empathy.
Mm-hmm.
The Norfolk County District Attorney, Michael Morrissey, agreed that Rod shouldn't be let out. And the parole board, and he said, quote, the parole board has a difficult task of discerning when a candidate has shown true personal growth, remorse, and understanding of their crimes, and mm-hmm. when they are instead presenting a facade of change in pursuit of freedom, mm-hmm. aka, he a big fat liar, you know?
We can like, see right through you, buddy.
We can see, I mean, you did good hanging your head, shedding some tears, but you lie, you fry.
But, and that's the thing, like, people can change. I've said it before, I truly believe people can change, especially, what, after 40-something years, but
mm-hmm.
you have to look at how he's, his behavior in prison, and
mm-hmm.
you have to be able to discern and see through the fakeness.
Yeah. Well, Sean's family, of course, was pleased with him staying behind bars.
Right.
And they feel like he should never be released.
Absolutely.
Sean's mother went to every single parole hearing. And every time she would say, I don't feel safe if he gets out.
Mm.
If he gets out,
oh my God.
I am looking over my shoulder. I would live in fear.
Yeah.
And in fact, Sean's little sister, Yvonne, said the same thing at every hearing. Mm. His mother told the Patriot Ledger, mm-hmm. quote, "There is no solace for a mother that loses a child. None." Mm-hmm. End quote. And in that interview with Investigation Discovery, she did say she forgave Rod Matthews, but just because she forgives him doesn't mean she thinks he should get out. There's a price to pay.
Right.
You know, Sean paid with his life. Rod should pay with his life.
For sure.
And I think he will. All his parole hearings have been denied, all four of them. So what could he do or say in the future? How could he do something different to change their minds? He clearly lacks empathy and remorse, even now.
Yeah.
Like, it shows. And he's really terrible at faking it.
Yeah.
I don't know that he will ever convince the parole board that he's really sorry.
Wow.
I don't think he can do that. Now, Rod will be up for parole again in 2025. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's taking acting classes, perhaps, in preparation for that hearing in a couple of years. But I will say, you know, it is refreshing to see a parole board keeping a dangerous individual locked up.
Right, it is.
How many times do we do cases where someone's let out on parole, they reoffend, they're put back in, they're released? When I was getting into this case and I kept seeing that all these hearings were denied, I was just like, wow, they're taking months to make these decisions. They're not just like, okay, we'll come back next Tuesday and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Now, I do understand that Rod was so young when he committed this crime. But it's the desire to kill someone, that is not a byproduct of immaturity. That is evil.
Well, it is. The moral compass.
But
it also comes along with, like you said, that he had watched, what was that show? Faces of Death. Kids should not be watching that stuff. I mean,
we should be shielding our kids from that, but protect them. Most kids who saw something like that, animals being killed, people being killed, that they knew it was a real thing, they might shy away from that. That's human nature, even as an adolescent. I mean, I can see boys, you know, teenage boys going, oh man, did you see that? And, you know, passing things around. But I think at the core of humanity, we turn away from things like that.
Right.
I think that's, I don't know, I just think that's normal. But you know those cases where, like, a teenage girl will kill her parents because they told her she has to stop seeing her loser boyfriend? Or, like, when a college-age guy kills his parents because he's not actually going to class this whole time. He's actually failing, and he's been spending that tuition money on partying instead. So he kills his parents so they don't even find out. So they won't find out. I would say those motives are positively ridiculous. And to quote the defense's criminologist, quote, trivial. However, I'd lean towards releasing those kids over Rod Matthews. It's his admission of his desire to kill that I cannot look beyond. Yeah. It's his innate desire to kill and wonder what it's like to kill somebody. The other kids I just mentioned, it's circumstantial. It's that. True.
Just didn't get their way, but.
Exactly. Anyway. It's that immaturity. It's that, you know, I'm going to solve this problem in the worst way possible. And you see interviews of those people later on in their lives, and they cannot believe that they killed their parents. They want to throw up at the thought of what they did as a child. Mm-hmm. And you can tell, I mean, just think of when you were 14.
I mean, when I was 14,
those like just feeling misunderstood. And I know it's different for girls than it is for boys, but just so much is going on at that time in your life. And you really could just make decisions, like terrible decisions. But like you said, a moral compass, it's somewhere in there.
Yeah.
For most of us, I think, even as an adolescent.
Well, yeah, we know we're created, right from wrong. We're created with that yeah. Conscience of, you know, good and bad.
Yes, we are. And even my 3-year-old knows right. when she's doing something wrong.
Exactly.
It's something that is a normal part of the wiring of our brain. It mm-hmm. doesn't matter if you're frontal lobe is fully developed and you, well, you know, that impulse control isn't there.
Mm-mm.
Well, but if the impulse control isn't there and you make a wrong decision, you know, you've made a wrong decision, you know, right from wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even my 3-year-old.
Yeah.
So the argument that, well, he was a kid, you know, yeah. he just wanted to know what it. No, I can't. It's
evil. He was evil.
I won't. Now, I'm getting to the good part.
Okay.
It's spooky season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all know it's spooky season, and if you thought I wasn't going to be talking about ghosties, you'd be wrong. So here we go.
Okay.
In November of 2014, we're going to hop back a little bit. The Canton Citizen did a story about a show on Lifetime, the Lifetime Network,
mm-hmm.
called The Ghost Inside My Child.
Mm.
Now, in this particular series of the show, they highlighted child reincarnation. Lena left the room, actually, guys. Lena's gone.
I'm about to, actually.
Lena's like,
bye. I can't get behind that.
But stay with me. Just hang in there. So they were particularly exploring children who died violent deaths in their past life. So they contacted Jean Quinn, who's Sean's mother. Why were they contacting her? Well, a 13-year-old boy named Jacob, who was actually living in the Midwest, grew up telling his family that Lena's over there. Her eyes are rolled in the back of her head. Okay, listen. He grew up telling his family that he was murdered in his past life. This 13-year-old kid. He grew up. Like, his whole life he told his parents this. His parents say this. Not just murdered, but he told them he was beaten with a baseball bat and left in the woods. From a young age. Okay? Mm-hmm. He had nightmares. And much of his life, he would tell his family about his nightmares. And he would say that he wanted to go live with his real mom and sister. Yeah. So when producers contacted Jean to be a part of the show, they called her Jeannie. So she was like, say what? The producers were answering all of her questions. She's like, well, who is this kid? Like, what? And I think it's like, a parent whose child has been murdered, I would be like, get stuffed. Like, this is sick. Why would you come around? Why would you dredge right. up this? Like, this, what? But she just was like, how did you come to this? Like, she's asking all these questions. Like, she was actually quite curious. Yeah, exactly. Right. And
did you hear a
the
story?
Producers were like... answering her questions, and in answering some of her questions, they were mentioning some details from his autopsy that were never released to the public. They were actually never even discussed at trial.
What?
And it was that she was like, okay, I kind of believe you.
Oh.
So how could this little boy know about those injuries to Sean. Well, she felt really nervous to meet this Jacob kid. Okay. Right. But as soon as he entered the room, she felt this peace, like a wave of peace washed over her. She said he looked nothing like Sean. Didn't look anything like him. But she could see Sean in his eyes almost. And what caught her was he smelled like Sean. Wow. He smelled exactly like Sean. And it took her right back to the last time that she hugged him and smelled him. Like, you just know your kid smells. Like, I could tell my kids apart by their poop. I just could.
Yeah, I mean, now, it's different.
From this report, it seemed like she really believed that this Jacob kid was her son reincarnated. And she understands that most people won't get this. Mm-hmm. She's like, I get it. And she said, quote, I'm no Bible thumper and I'm no spook chaser. But maybe victims of violent deaths have tried everything. Ghosts, poltergeists, talking through animals, all this other stuff, and nobody believed it. End quote. So she keeps in touch with Jacob's mother, actually, and Jacob, and she said it's given her peace over the years.
Yeah.
And she feels like since then she can move forward in a new way. She feels like Sean, she felt like Sean was okay now.
Right.
Like, he died so violently, now maybe he's okay.
Yeah.
And maybe she doesn't really believe it, but maybe it helps her in some way. Well, and I say, let her have it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm a Bible thumper. I'll just go ahead and say it. But I do believe that there's a spiritual thing here in this case. I don't know about the reincarnation, but yeah. I mean, there's angels. There's a talking donkey in the Bible. So
there's a talking burning bush. You know, it doesn't matter if anyone believes in that
right.
sort of thing.
Right.
I say if it's not hurting you, you know, this woman's child was murdered before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And Thanksgiving was like their favorite holiday. Mm. Like, Sean would eat like 3 plates of food. He loved it. And she even said in this documentary that while Sean was missing, she would make cookies and like bake stuff and leave the window cracked so it would waft out the window and maybe he would smell it and come home. And like, let her believe what she needs to believe to cope, because it's her life. It's her grief.
It is. Yeah.
And when I mentioned earlier that she said she'd forgiven Rod Matthews, this is why. She felt very clear-headed. She felt like Sean was okay. And not to say that, okay, good, he's fine.
Right,
but
right.
Like, this doesn't take her grief away, but she can focus on the life she has now.
Right.
And actually, that interview as well, she talked about how when Sean was missing, another thing that she did was she completely forgot she had another child.
Oh.
Like, not literally,
but
she knew she really neglected Yvonne because she was consumed. Oh, I'm going to go look for Sean. Like, one night she told Yvonne, she woke her up and said, I'm going to go to Hull, like where they used to live, and be like, I'm going to go to Hull and look for Sean. Mm. Just consumed with everything she could do, which was nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
But luckily she was able to also remedy that, and her and Yvonne were able to move forward. And lastly, I'll just say that Sean is buried in St. Mary's Cemetery in Canton. And I hope he is at peace.
Yeah.
I really do. I really do.
Yeah. I'm sure he is. Yes. Rest in peace, Sean. I'm sorry that happened to you and your family. Well, thank you for
telling me. And we miss you. Yeah. We miss you, Sean. You are missed.
Yes.
You are missed. So that's all I got for you.
Well, that was a very interesting case. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So to go off of that, I'll tell you, I'm thankful for a pure heart. That I don't have that evil in my life, because that's yucky.
Yeah. I'm thankful for my upbringing.
Yeah.
And I know that I didn't always understand
the shelter.
And I do think, yeah, and, you know, some of it was over the top, even looking back now. But my parents were just doing what they felt was right and necessary to keep me safe. And I would say they did a good job, because I have a tether. I can float over. I was explaining this to my dad one time when he tried to talk me out of going into psychology. he's like, that's just such a dark subject. But I told him that I can watch a scary movie right before bed. I don't have nightmares. I can do my research, write my case, you know, right before bed, which is often the only time I have to work on these cases, and go to sleep and not have nightmares. I don't know what that says about me as a whole, but in my opinion, I feel like I have a tether. I feel like I can be comfortable in certain situations. Maybe it is my empathy that I can empathize with these victims that we talk about. And I feel like I can be uncomfortable for a few hours while I'm doing research, because they paid with their life.
Yeah, and we get to tell their story.
Exactly. And so that tether, I think, is part biology, I would say, but part how I was raised.
Yeah.
That nurtured environment that I grew up in. And, you know, Rod actually expressed his desire to kill. He expressed his desire to light things on fire to teachers, and it was ignored.
Yeah.
So pay attention, you know, like pay attention to what your kids are doing. But I'm thankful that I had such a great upbringing, loving home.
Yeah.
And that probably largely cushioned me from my 14-year-old decisions that I made. Because I did have a huge conscience. Like, I mean, I would do something and then immediately go tell my mom that I did it. Like, I just always did that. My sister does the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just that instillment, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Nature and nurture.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And I think you also have always had a very strong conscience.
Well, thank you for noticing. Thank you for saying that, because it's been instilled in us. And but when you also have a spiritual relationship, you know, I have, you know, God in my life, and that it helps.
Well, yeah, and you have an accountability to a higher power, and that helps you too, and that's nice, but it just makes me sad. I feel like, what if Rod had had somebody step in and go, that's not normal.
We need to get you some help.
You should probably, Or what if somebody had stepped in and shown him love? Yeah. Or, I don't know. It's just, it's so sad. But you know who was loved? Sean.
Yep.
Sean was loved.
He sure was.
And we are loved.
What are you smelling over there?
I don't know. Daniel might be cooking something downstairs. Oh,
okay, so tell me what food you're thankful for.
Oh, yeah. That's a perfect transition. I'm thankful for Culver's.
So last week was...
Do you know how many Scoopy Coopies we have? So when you get a kid's meal from Culver's, you get... You can either get a scoop of frozen custard, or you can have a scoopy coopy for later so you can redeem it at another time. We have like 20 because you can't, I don't know, like you get the, you can get the flavor of the day. You can get vanilla, chocolate, or flavor of the day. Sometimes I don't like flavor of the day, so I won't get it. So we've just collected
these scoopy coopies. Can you only use it at y'all's location?
I don't think so.
So either you're going to have to.
But I've already mapped them, and there's nowhere, there's not one anywhere near us, which is, you know, it's devastating. Isn't there one but an hour I will away? Tell you.
45 minutes.
I think there's one by, there's one in Louisville.
There you go.
Let's go take it back to last week's episode. Yeah. I think there is one in Louisville. But, you know, I will say I'll probably lose weight. No, I won't. Let's be honest. Chick-fil-A's
right down the road.
I'm not going to lose weight. I've got good Mexican food. Yeah. I've got Chicken Express.
There's a lot of food here in Texas.
Delicious barbecue, which you would think in South Carolina we would have, but we do not.
And yeah, so that's, you said barbecue. My husband makes the best brisket, hands down. So
okay.
I'm thankful
hands
for that.
Down, Chris, I'm all about it. Coming over.
Yep, we're going to have to do it.
So what is your thankful food?
Yeah, brisket. I'm going to have to say brisket.
Thankful food for.
Yeah.
I love a good brisket.
Cool.
Lean, though. Yeah. I like a good lean brisket.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, we'll have to have one of those.
Now I'm hungry.
I know.
Again, I had a salad for dinner, but I could go for some brisket right now.
Yeah.
I can go for another milkshake.
Well, go get it. I'm sure it's in the freezer.
Waiting on me. Well, guys, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
You know, 10,000 downloads and counting.
We're doing this thing.
10.4 now, I think. But
look at us go.
Yeah, we're doing it. Look at us.
Well.
Thanks for helping us get there, guys.
Yeah, thank you for your support.
We love you.
We do love you. And yeah, have a good one.
Yeah.
Let's
do it again sometime.
What am I supposed to say here? I don't know. Let's do it again sometime.
Lena, you missed your line.
Know, all right, for real though. Bye, y'all.
Bye now.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.